Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another Daily Friend Wrap. I'm Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Makone Maja. Let's get into the first news story of today. And this is one of those stories that made me, well, I just kept giggling when I read through it because it's so embarrassing for the country that if you don't laugh, you'll cry. The DA is claiming that it has found out that Mxhlabisibe Jonas, the president's special envoy to North America, who was supposed to salvage our reputation with the Americans to be essentially South Africa's new ambassador to the United States, is in fact not welcome in Washington, D.C. And not only is he not welcome in Washington, D.C., but Jonas has been denied his diplomatic visa already in May of this year, about a month after the president appointed him. According to the DA's Emma Powell, the U.S. government has formally rejected Jonas's credentials and has informed the presidency that he would not be recognized as South Africa's official interlocutor. The Ramaphosa administration, according, this is from reading from the DA statement, was advised on multiple occasions that Jonas was not acceptable to Washington and was urged to appoint an alternative an envoy. The presidency continued to mislead the public by insisting that Jonas remained the president's special envoy to North America, responsible for leading the charge in repairing bilateral relations. Then the DA says, in an SABC interview in June of 2025, despite being fully aware that Jonas had been denied a diplomatic visa by the U.S. and would not be formally received, President Ramaphosa doubled down on national TV, declaring, Mxhlabisibe Jonas is still my North American envoy and has done good work. Makone, I mean, look, so far as the story's coming out, we only have the DA's word for it, but I'm like, 90% sure this is true. What's your take on this?
You know, if this is true, this is ultimately one of the biggest scandals, because we've been reading over the last 2 weeks about all these automobile association from NAMSA to NAMCA who are experiencing this huge loss in exports because of the tariffs. And I imagine they've, you know, just hoping that they can hold off for a few more months until negotiations with the United States are, you know, concluded and we can have mutually beneficial trade agreements emerge from that, that will lessen the burden on these, you know, essentially huge companies. We're talking Ford, we're talking Ford manufacturers, we're talking Mercedes-Benz, all who have these plants in South Africa, BMW have these plants in South Africa, and they export these vehicles, many of which go to the United States. And I can just imagine them just holding out until negotiations are completed and they can, you know, make up for the losses they've suffered through these exports, only to find out.
We've had government officials saying, oh, everything's going fine. You know, we're making progress. Everyone relax. Yes,
indeed, we have had that. And within the public, there's been a sense of, but how is it that, you know, these Afrikaans representative groups have better access to the White House than our own designated envoy, official South African representative who's sent out there on our behalf, to liaise on our behalf? Only to find out that there's a huge cover-up, we've all been deceived, and the president is, I'm not even sure, sitting on this as a secret, hoping that it'll resolve itself. I mean, it's such a President Cyril Ramaphosa thing to do, to just hide under the bed and to shove the story under the bed as well, to sort of make it go away. And in the meantime, hundreds of thousands of jobs are at stake, a huge chunk of our economy also, because so much of our exports go to the United States. It's such negligence, you know, it's completely unacceptable that they are allowed to not only to risk such huge critical parts of our economy by hoping that, I'm not sure, that this story will just resolve itself. And that this entire time, we actually haven't had anyone advocating on behalf of South Africa's interests, apart from the visit that the president made, which also didn't seem to produce substantive results. But it's infuriating and it's quite scandalous if it does turn out to be true. I'm not sure what the president's defense will be.
Yeah, and it's not just this story. I mean, we were discussing this in the pre-show discussion. We've seen these other two news stories, which are exactly this theme of Cyril under the bed, as you say. Apparently, the ANC's National Working Committee has decided to resolve the National Executive Committee, postpone the National Executive Committee's next meeting while they wait for a report on the GNU. And the implication I draw from this is that Cyril, who I think is pretty in control of the National Working Committee, doesn't want the NEC to meet because he's pretty sure that it's going to have a big fight about kicking the DA out of the GNU, which he doesn't want to do. So rather than sort of have that fight, he just seems to be postponing, postponing, postponing. But on the other side, Ramaphosa's office has said that it is unlikely to clear his schedule to discuss the DA's national dialogue withdrawal with John Steenhuisen. So, I mean, apparently, if you just put your hands over your ears and close your eyes, then nothing bad ever happens, at least according to the way that President Ramaphosa seems to run things. I note that even in his announcement of the Commission of Inquiry on Sunday night, he gives this very rote speech. He announces everything, and then he just, that's it, over, done, he leaves. There's no questions from the media. There's no sort of interaction with the public. There's no sort of opining about, how this is a test for the nation. It was very procedural. And he really just seems to be ducking and diving and slipping and sliding as much as he can right now. Am I being unfair?
No, quite spot on. The president seems to not only be afraid of us because we never get to engage him, right? You never really have the president sitting there receiving spontaneous questions from journalists, just asking him about what's going on in the country. You never get that, let alone a meeting with his biggest coalition partner in the government. And it's not that the president's too busy. It's not that his schedule's full and that's why he can't make time to meet with John Steenhuisen. No, it's because he's under the bed. He doesn't want to be confronted, and it seems to be that his approach is out of sight, out of mind. If he's not confronted with it, then he never has to deal with it. And this has come to characterize President Ramaphosa's term as the president of South Africa. It's that he, unfortunately, presents himself to be cowardly. He refuses to engage on robust issues. He refuses to be decisive. We usually giggle about how indecisive he is, except these are like substantive issues. These are material issues when you're talking about export partners being involved in tariffs and how costly this all is to the economy, but also that the whole government's now at stake, right? The biggest coalition partner that's keeping the ANC effectively in power, and the ANC has been able to wield the little power that they have left quite effectively within the GNU. But even them, they too get the cold shoulder. It's quite unthinkable. He had so many opportunities to redeem himself, to just stand and make a difference. It's his last term. He's only got a few years left to clock in. And even then, he can be found under the bed.
Yeah, well, we'll get to see him at the National Dialogue, so I'm sure that'll be all the things we're searching for. I jest, of course. Let's go on to our next story. And this is something that when we discussed it before the show, McCorn filled you with righteous rage. It's a very common story in South Africa. But in this specific incidence, Philippili residents are demanding jobs on a MyCity infrastructure project in the city of Cape Town. The MyCity project is rolling out to various areas, and a group of people in Philippili said that they've handed over a memorandum of demands to the city of Cape Town, demanding a response to their grievances. They say they want local people hired from the area to work on this project. Ironically, the protesters live in the Ramaphosa informal settlement, who the people who want jobs in the project. I don't know if that says something about this is sort of darkly ironic, but anyway. Their protest leader said, "We've been talking with the city and the contractor for a long time, and it's clear the only language they understand is disruption. So we are disrupting the continuation of the project." The city has obtained a court interdict against the Philippili and Crossroads business forums and two individuals who they say have been trying to intimidate workers on the project to prevent it from moving forward. The protesters blocked roads and caused just general disruptions. A MACO member for urban mobility told the media that the city does not prevent anyone from participating in the My City project, but there are lawful and transparent processes available to local businesses and residents from the affected wards to apply for available opportunities. Just because you apply doesn't mean you will receive an opportunity. We do not accede to any demands of the project work to be halted, as this will result in standing time costs for the city. Makone, your take on this story?
You know, I think in South Africa, we've coddled violent protests for far too long. Where we are beyond the pale now. We all know how counterproductive these are. They're protesting to be fair to the residents of Philippi, they're protesting because they want jobs, right? But I think they're directing their frustration at the wrong entity, and certainly in the wrong manner. You know, this is a construction project that's probably going to bring buses into those communities who will then have better access to the city, you know, better, safer, more agile transportation in and into and out of the city. It's for them. This is their infrastructure. And destroying it in protest of wanting jobs is counterproductive. And it is, we shouldn't tolerate this any longer. I think that for years there's been fear of backlash from communities about what would happen if, you know, there was actually law enforcement happening on the ground against such protests. And, you know, the government's shown its teeth before when the EFF was threatening us with a national shutdown. And there were randomly bricks and, you know, tires just prepared to be burnt just, you know, randomly around Johannesburg. And they were able to foil those objectives of the EFF and others who are accompanying them. So the government's actually shown us that it has the ability to quash these strikes ahead of time. And I think the city of Cape Town is trying to do the same here. And so far, it's been one of the most proactive, you know, municipalities that this, you'll remember those violent strikes that it had with their taxi associations and how deadly those were, unfortunately. But I think that is, we need deterrence. We need people, unfortunately, to suffer consequences for strikes. It should be intolerable now. There should be better ways of mobilizing, of advocating without resorting to violence. And, you know, you read a statement where one of the community members or whoever's leading this protest makes the remark that government officials typically respond to violence. And, you know, unfortunately, that's also true that we have enabled this by responding urgently when people take up violent means of protest. But there are better ways of mobilizing. We do it every day as NGOs, right? We're also in the business of protesting, opposing, mobilizing against government policies that precisely result in this joblessness and, you know, a lack of trust in these institutions such that people end up taking the law into their own hands. But doesn't mean we need to, you know, burn down buildings or burn down buses or destroy infrastructure, the very infrastructure that looks after our interests. It's completely unacceptable. And the coddling ends now.
No, well said. And I think the response from the MACO here was pretty good, pretty sort of a bit technocratic. Not quite in the terms you've put it, but the sort of sentiment I think was kind of generally in the right direction. Yeah, no, one also sees from the court interdicts and stuff, and the fact that there are business forums allegedly tied up in this. Business forum is often a cover used by construction mafias. That in this case, you know, we see what happens over and over again across South Africa, which is that people have very legitimate grievances. People have grievances about crime, about corruption. They have legitimate grievances about joblessness. And unscrupulous people come along and sort of insert themselves in as quote-unquote leaders, unelected, of course, who then, you know, say that they're representing the community by making us all get jobs on the project, but it's not just jobs. They often find a way to benefit from themselves. Now, I do note this particular protest, the business forum who the city got the interdict against, claims they're not involved. So maybe they weren't involved in this particular one. Who knows? But I think the point still stands that so often these very legitimate and genuine grievances of people are manipulated by criminal elements and sort of malign actors to create chaos, burning down of schools, breaking of infrastructure, vandalism, all that sort of stuff. Any final thoughts before we close up for today?
No, you're absolutely right. Although it's hard, we can't confirm that that's the case in this instance. But there are typically these nefarious entities who are pulling the strings in the background to carry out their private interests, you know, like shake down these construction companies or shake down the municipality to pay more. That's the modus operandi of these construction mafias. And who better to, you know, take advantage of than residents who are desperate for jobs and, you know, want to contribute, make a meaningful contribution to their towns, their cities, and help in the construction of those projects, you know. And those are all like virtuous, amiable goals, but the ends through which, you know, the means through which those ends are being carried out, no, that has to stop. We have to take better care of our infrastructure. We have to take better care of our communities. You can't destroy your community and then come back and say, you know, you were doing it for the community. No, it doesn't work like that.
Yes, exactly.
And perhaps people will say, you know, it's easy for us to talk about mobilizing comfortably from our houses, you know, when these residents are, you know, in a far more vulnerable position, and I understand. But in addition to that,
we don't need to use the bus service that's being destroyed in the sense. I mean, like,
that's the point I was going to make. Although I use public transport, I don't know about you, Nick, but I still use public transportation.
Leave
but
my we don't house,
fair. But we don't need to, you know, and we're privileged enough, but you know, where you actually have a vested interest in maintaining that infrastructure because it carries you to and from work, you have a greater responsibility and duty to make sure that you protect that. And we saw that during the July riots. You remember, you know, various groups came out and protected places like Maponya Mall and even Midland. I remember the Midland Taxi Association said, not here, because this is where we conduct our business. This is how we make our livelihoods. So they protected
does wonder if you went to one of these communities and you asked and you actually held like a vote and you said, you know, should we participate in a protest like this? I sort of suspect that the majority would say, yeah, no, we'd rather just have the bus service sooner rather than later than a few temporary construction jobs. But anyway.
Yeah, be mob mentality, you know, how you can get swept up in the rage and the mob.
How very loud voices in a group there can sort of drown out the silent majority.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. We will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.